Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Glad you could make it. Stick around. We're going to have a very interesting evening coming up at the top of the second hour. We're going to be joined by Dana Siegelman. She is the wife of former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, who is in prison right now on what most observers believe is the result of Governor Siegelman having gotten on the wrong side of Karl Rove. You could make the case that former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman is a political prisoner in the purest sense. We're going to be talking with Dana Siegelman coming up top of the next hour. If you're not familiar with that story, you might want to do an ask.com or a Google search real quick and just type in Don Siegelman. It's astonishing. Chris Matthews, I think Chris Matthews might need to face something deep inside himself that he may not want to face. Now, you can decide after you hear this little bit what it is, and it's up for grabs. It may be one of a couple of different psychosexual distinctions that Chris Matthews is dealing with. Of all the people on television, I think Chris Matthews is the one most known for his man crushes. You know what I mean? Over and over, we see this guy get gushy and weak-kneed over what he refers to as Bush's raw manliness. Whew. He's talked about Fred Thompson's manly smell. I guess he's referring to cigars and men's cologne. I don't know. He has commented on Mitt Romney's broad shoulders. And he just goes absolutely weak in the knees over John McCain. I've never really seen any commentator, male or female, get so wobbly over male politicians. I've never seen a female correspondent get this way. I've never seen a male correspondent. Something is ticking inside of Chris Matthews. However, he also apparently is some sort of, this is one of the options, a real misogynist, or maybe just misogynistic against Hillary Clinton. I will not vote for Hillary Clinton. That has nothing to do with this story. Chris Matthews is getting very, very offensive about Hillary Clinton. Now, we're just a couple of weeks away from the first primaries in this horrendous, hideous presidential race. And as is reported at, where is this? Where's this from? Oh my God. I don't even know where this is from. Media Matters? I'm not sure. As reported at their website, I think it is Media Matters, candidates, you are lining up and talking about the endorsements they've gotten. But Chris Matthews is, just went out of his gourd about Joe Lieberman crossing purported party lines to endorse John McCain, who I really think Chris Matthews wants to sleep with. I'm sorry, I just think he does. And therefore, Lieberman broke his promise that he would help elect Democrats. Now, apparently, that isn't as upsetting to Tweety as the fact that Democrats are backing, not moi, but Democrats are backing the candidate at the top of the Democratic polls, who is Hillary Clinton. I realize that Barack Obama is ahead in a couple of the statewide polls, but leading the pack nationwide is Hillary Clinton. The other day, Matthews on Hardball, Matthews said, I'm talking about the moral weight on these people who are willing to do anything now. You got Vilsack out there now, Strickland, Evan Bayh. Every time I pick a paper, there's another quote from some wannabe saying whatever the Clinton people told him to say, apparently. Do these lines look like they're being fed to these guys? And his guest, political commentator said, it's politics, Chris. And then Matthews comes back. Let me find some outrage here so I can get some from Christia. I'm not getting any from you. Christia, aren't you appalled at the willingness of these people to become castratos in the eunuch chorus here or whatever they are? What do you call them? I don't really know if they're. What do you think of these people? Castratos in the first place, I think he means castrati. Since Chris Matthews is a heavy-duty Catholic, obviously he had Latin at some point in his life. But Chris, I may be mistaken here, but I think you're referring to castrati. Those are the singers in Renaissance Italy whose testicles were cut off so that their voices wouldn't change and they would maintain their high, clear, bell-like tones as they matured into adulthood. And Chris Matthews is referring to Hillary Clinton supporters as castratos, eunuchs, the eunuch chorus. Chris, I know you don't hear me. I know you never will. But you've got to get your mind out of other men's pants. You have to. Or just come out and state the fact that you lust after Mitt Romney. You want to go to bed with John McCain. You'd like to kiss Fred Thompson. You would like a big old hug from George Bush's raw manliness. Just come out. There's nothing wrong with men hugging. Or for that matter, I mean, look at George Bush and Prince Saud of Saudi Arabia. They can hardly keep their hands off each other. And there's not a thing wrong with it. But Chris Matthews talks about smells and tastes and touches and textures about these other men. Yo, Chris, either admit that you really have a problem with powerful women like Hillary Clinton, and regardless of what one thinks of her, she has quite a bit of political power, Chris. Regardless of what one thinks of her, to refer to Democrats who support her as castratos and part of the eunuch chorus really, really shows more about yourself than about Hillary or her supporters, Chris. Now, you're kind of an interesting-looking man yourself. Maybe something is going on that you just need to confront and deal with and be accepting of. Don't wind up, you know, being caught in the John at Reagan National Airport or whatever it's called in D.C., tapping your foot under a stall. Come on, Chris. Just fess up if that's what's going on here. But Fred Thompson's manly smell? Willard Romney's broad shoulders? George Bush's raw manliness? Is that what you call that? Raw manliness? Oy. And the crush he has on McCain just never stops. What is it about McCain? No. Don't answer. I don't even want to complete the question. So Chris Matthews, Hillary Clinton supporters are castratos. Is that right? Will somebody email me? Is it? I thought it was castrati. Isn't that the plural of castrato? It's not. You don't add an S, Chris. You make it castrati. That's the Latin plural ending.
Actually, I think you pronounce that Larry Craig.
You're a bad person, Catherine Bay. You're a bad person. All right, we have a break coming here. I saw this story today, I thought, what? Because, yeah, I sometimes watch Hardball because I do like to watch MSNBC in the afternoon. What's the alternative if you're trying to get the day's commentary, political commentary, to watch the former U-boat commander, Wolf Blitzer, as he interviews weirdos? It's much more fun to watch Chris Matthews, but it's just getting a little trying, Chris, with your man crushes. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I think if you're really feeling that, for heaven's sake, just, well, you know. I think I'm all.
Need some wood?
I don't know why you're playing that song. That's one of the favorite songs from my high school years. Theme from a summer place. The Bush crime family has been ordered by U.S. District Judge Henry Kennedy to answer some questions about the destruction of those videotapes that showed torture of the so-called two Al-Qaeda suspects. In issuing this order today, the judge has rejected the Bush crime family's efforts to keep the courts out of the investigation. The Bush crime family is also trying to keep the Congress out of the investigation. The Bush crime family, in other words, wants to continue investigating itself. U.S. District Judge Henry Kennedy ordered Justice Department lawyers to appear before him Friday at 11 a.m., to discuss whether destroying the tapes violated a court order. Now, the Bush crime family, the Justice Department, under Senator Charles Schumer's man, Mr. McCasey, the Justice Department, has urged Congress and the courts to back off, saying its investigators need time to complete their inquiry, which means they need time to destroy as much evidence as they possibly can. Attorneys for the Bush crime family and Mr. McCasey say the courts don't have the authority to get involved in the matter. So you issued a restraining order. So what? Judge Kennedy disagrees. And by the way, in unrelated cases, there are attorneys, meanwhile, pressing other judges to demand information about the tapes because the testimony, what is on those tapes possibly would have an effect on the conviction of their clients. One comes to mind immediately, Jose Padilla. But I digress. In June, 2 years ago, 2005, Judge Kennedy ordered the Bush administration to safeguard, quote, all evidence and information regarding the torture, mistreatment, and abuse of detainees now at the United States Naval Base at Guantanamo Bay, close quote. Now, 5 months later, the CIA destroyed these torture videos. The Justice Department argued, the Bush crime family's Justice Department argued, that the videos weren't covered by the judge's order because, are you ready? Because the two men were being held in secret CIA prisons overseas, not at Guantanamo Bay. So there, you rat bastard judge. Put that in your smoke and pipe it. Wow. Judge Kennedy didn't say why he was ordering the hearing or what he planned to ask. Even if the judge accepts this argument that the government, the Bush crime family, did not violate his order because the tapes were of detainees in secret prisons somewhere else, the judge still could raise questions about obstruction of justice or something called, I found out today, spoliation, a legal term that refers to the destruction of evidence in, quote, pending or reasonably foreseeable litigation, end quote, something that may come up later. Now, you and I know why the Bush crime family destroyed the tapes, obviously. And as has been pointed out by some very reputable sources, the truth of the 9/11 incidents in this country will now probably, the truth will probably never be known now if those tapes have in fact been destroyed. Now, also today, lawyers for a man convicted of terrorism charges alongside Jose Padilla asked a federal judge in Miami to force the government to turn over any remaining evidence regarding one of those torture interrogations. Prosecutors have acknowledged that one of the victims in the torture interrogation, Mr. Zubeda, provided information identifying Jose Padilla as an Al-Qaeda operative working on a purported dirty bomb, which led to his Padilla's arrest at Chicago's O'Hare International Airport back in May of 2002. Now, the Bush crime family's Justice Department has no comment on Judge Kennedy's decision to hold a hearing. The lawyers for the Bush crime family's Justice Department are working with the CIA to investigate the destruction of the tapes and urge the judge to give them the space and time to let them investigate. Come on, judge, for Christ's sake, you know what we're trying to do here. Back off! Wow. Of course, the Bush crime family has a similar strategy in dealing with Congress on this very issue. Last week, the Bush crime family's corrupted Justice Department pretty much demanded that lawmakers hold off on questioning witnesses and demanding documents because, well, you know, that evidence is part of our joint CIA Justice Department investigation. So come on, guys, back off, you sons of bitches. You're irrelevant anyway. Back off. Brr. Wow. Also, Attorney General Michael Mukasey has refused to give Congress details of the government's investigation into the matter, saying doing so could raise questions about whether the inquiry was vulnerable to political pressure. Oh, like the jailing of former Governor Don Siegelman. That kind of political pressure? General Mukasey? By the way, Judge Kennedy served as a federal prosecutor during the Nixon and Ford administrations. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour, and again, coming up right after the break here at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by Dana Siegelman, the daughter of political prisoner and former governor of Alabama, Don Siegelman. Bruce in New Jersey writes, "What the hell, Mike? Turkey bombs Iraq on Sunday, and we're just hearing about it now? Liberal mainstream media, my ass. We are completely responsible for the safety of all the Iraqis, including and especially the Kurds. It's bad enough we do nothing when private contractors kill civilians. Now we're letting anyone kill them. Just when you think it can't get any worse." And what he's talking about, of course, is the news that came out pretty much today. It may have dribbled out a little bit yesterday, but we are providing the intelligence for Turkey. Real-time intelligence that's helping the Turkish military target a series of attacks against Kurdish separatists holed up in northern Iraq. There was a large airstrike on Sunday. Nobody knows how many people killed or how successful it was. This is exactly what we did for Saddam Hussein in his war against the Iranians back in the early 80s. We provided real-time intelligence from U-2 spy planes and AWACS so that the Iraqis could continue murdering Iranians. We also provided the poison gas materials so that the Iraqis could, under Saddam, could murder Kurds in northern Iraq. Now, the Kurds, of course, control the northern part of that sad country right now, Iraq. And it's the only part of the country that is peaceful, or it was peaceful. So now the Bush crime family, knowing that the Turks have, they've got this, 300-500-year-long feud with the Kurds, 600, 700 years, who the hell knows? So the Bush crime family is working with the Turkish government. Remember, the Turks are the ones who said we could not cross their airspace to begin our bombing campaign against Bush's bombing campaign against Iraq. The Turks are the ones that said, no, you can't, not only can you not you can't station troops here, you can't station material here, but you can't cross our airspace. And if you'll remember, there was a slight bit of upset from some of the chicken hawks in the Bush crime family when the Turks said that, because it meant that the war machine had to operate from the southern part of Iraq, and a much more difficult route to advance towards Baghdad and yada, 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 yada. So here we are, now assisting the Turks in targeting the Kurdish fighters who have been struggling for their autonomous region or their independence or their state, whatever you want to call it. For how long? Christ, I don't even know. It doesn't matter. For a long time. I wonder how much intelligence we provide to the Israelis. Probably none, because they are so much brighter, the Israeli military, than our military leaders. But I just wonder sometimes how much intelligence we provide to the Israelis so they can bomb Palestinians. And how much intelligence we provided to the Iraqis so they could bomb and kill Iranians. And the Turks so they can bomb and kill Kurds. Boy, we're a hell of a sweet country, aren't we? Huh? Reach around. All right, reach out. Pat yourself on the back. American, stop it. You're hitting too hard. Jesus, God. One U.S. military official said the United States is essentially handling the Turks their targets, or handing the Turks their targets. Now, as you can imagine, the airstrikes a couple of days ago resulted in outrage in Baghdad, particularly among Kurdish members of that country's leadership. Yeah, isn't what's his name? Barzani is the president of the Kurdish regional government, but who's the current head of Iraq? He's a Kurd, isn't he? I think he's a Kurd. Huh? Hell if I Maliki, thank you. Kathy says, hell if I know. Yes, Maliki. Anyway, the president of the Kurdish regional government called the attack a violation of Iraq's sovereignty. He blamed the U.S. military, which controls Iraqi airspace. Of course. I mean, we have had a no-fly zone over Iraq since what, 1992? And now we're working with the Turks to invade the airspace of a different country so that the Turks can kill people inside that country, that the Turks have an absolute ongoing struggle with. And why did the Turks have a struggle with the Kurds? Gosh, I guess you'd have to ask a Turk. But this is another result of Bush's amazing foreign policy. Aren't these sons of bitches just absolutely wonderful for causing death and destruction? Huh? And I like the way it's reported by the Washington Post. The American role in aiding Turkey, a NATO ally, could complicate U.S. diplomatic initiatives in Iraq, particularly efforts to push Iraqi political leaders to enact legislation aimed at promoting political reconciliation. Political reconciliation while we're providing the bombing coordinates to a different country to come into Iraq and kill people and blow stuff up? Jesus, God! Either we are run by people who are absolutely insane. Let's stop right there. So, yeah, mainstream media here in the United States finally got around to reporting the Bush crime family's latest craziness. Well, Turkey, you see, they're waiting. There's going to be a triggering event. A triggering event is going to occur. Turkey has what is reported by intelligence agencies as thousands of troops at the Turkey-Iraqi border. And they are threatening a military operation into northern Iraq. It's like, ready, set, they're just waiting for that next syllable. Bush and the madmen who work in the Bush crime family, there is no limit, is there, to the destruction that they cause and are capable of causing. If they're capable of causing it, they do it. Deep breath. Denver Post is reporting that the voting machines in Colorado don't measure up. According to the Denver Post, a significant number of, well, we talked about Ohio last night. Well, the Secretary of State in Colorado now says that enough of these electronic voting machines in use in Colorado are unreliable to the point and not secure to the point they are not in compliance with state laws, not to mention the fact that they don't work. Mike Kaufman, who is the Colorado Attorney, Secretary of State, said, quote, the results today of tests will have national repercussions across the country, end quote. He announced that his office, the Secretary of State's office in Colorado, had determined that Sequoia's electronic voting machines, they are named the Edge 2. Christ, that's the name of my pickup truck. The Edge 2 and the Edge 2 Plus. Rah, da, da, da. Sequoia's electronic voting machines, the Edge 2 and the Edge 2 Plus, both failed security. And optical scan devices, e-scan and ballot now, failed. They could not actually count ballots. ESNS optical scan devices failed because of the inability to determine whether they worked properly. A meeting is scheduled for 9 o'clock today. As a matter of fact, they had the meeting, I guess, at the state capitol with Secretary of State Kaufman and key legislators to discuss the issue and try to come up with solutions. I have a solution for you, Mr. Secretary of State. I'm just a talk show host based in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, but I have a solution for you. Take a goddamn sledgehammer to every voting machine in your state and smash them! Have paper ballots printed up! And when somebody comes in to vote, hand them a ballot and a pencil. And then have a big box. And they put it in the big box. And then have people you can trust. Who would that be in the state of Colorado? Surely to God, there are people you can trust. And then you take the people you can trust and you count the damn things by hand. And then a week later, when they're all counted, then you notify the media. Here's who came in first. Here's who came in second. Here's who came in third. And here are the ballots if you want to check them. That's what you do, Mr. Kaufman. I'm sorry that I've made it so simple. And I'm sorry I had to scream it at you. But, you know, I'm just an irrational, psychopathic, liberal talk show host in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains.
Just say no. And keep on lying all the time. George W. and Cheney D. couldn't win without a slimy trip. To Washington they had to run. States' rights weren't that much fun. Don't you hate that crap? They just keep lying all the time. They just keep lying.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Coming up right after the break at the top, they are here at Dana Siegelman, the daughter of former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, who is in jail because he had the temerity to not support members of the extended family, the Bush crime family, extended members of the Bush crime family, and is now serving, around 4 years in prison. And by the way, we may have a follow-up to this tomorrow night with some audio being provided to us from TakeBackTheMedia.com. Some audio, Siegelman, in his own words, he was interviewed by Take Back the Media in, in 04. And we may even get Michael Symbolman on, who hasn't been on this program for a couple of years, has he, Kathy? It's been a while. So we may have a follow-up tomorrow night. But you have to stick around and hear Dana Siegelman talk about the incarceration of her father and how it happened and the effect it's had on her and her family. Bob writes, "Hey, Mike, when the dust settles after the Democratic primaries are over, the chance of Dennis Kucinich, John Edwards, or Chris Dodd being the winning candidate are just about zero. So, even though I've always told my kids that they should vote, I'm not going to. There's absolutely no way in hell that I can pull the lever for spineless weasels. It used to be a choice. At worst, it used to be the lesser of two evils. Now, it looks like it's shaking up to be pure evil versus evil light. There are four Democratic senators currently running for president as of yesterday. There's only one who deserves our support because he put his ass on the line for us. While Senator Chris Dodd was doing everything he could to stop the telecoms from getting retroactive immunity in the Senate yesterday, here's what the other Democratic senators running for president did to protect us. Hillary Clinton, crisscrossing Iowa in a five-day helicopter tour, helicopter, as the campaign calls it. She is repeatedly reminding folks that Iowa's largest paper named her as its choice in the Democratic presidential race. On the Republican side, they picked John McCain. Isn't that special? Chris Dodd didn't have the chance to talk to Iowa constituents. He was actually leading. I wonder what Barack Obama was up to while Dodd fought for our Constitution. Obama's crowds remained strong throughout the day, though he was stumping in heavily Republican territory. He ended with a noisy rally before more than 1,000 people in an ornate restaurant, a restored theater in Sioux City, urging backers to throw caution to the wind and not be afraid to be bold. Looks like he had a full day of campaigning at his competitor Chris Dodd's expense. Isn't that sweet of Barack? It's almost as nice as Joe Biden's decision to do radio and campaign appearances in New Hampshire. Senator Biden to be guest on NPR's The Exchange. Senator Biden to address local Democrats at House Party in New Ipswich Place, the home of Lisa Brown. That's right. While Dodd was wearing out his vocal cords fighting for what's right, Joe Biden was having tea and cookies at Lisa Brown's house. All three senators said they support Dodd and oppose retroactive immunity, and all three let Dodd do all the work while they campaigned at his expense. Edwards and Richardson are not senators and couldn't vote or help filibuster, but Clinton, Obama, and Biden all disgraced themselves. They all dishonored themselves. When the FISA bill is brought up again in January, it will be right in the midst of the primaries. The progressive wing of the Democratic Party will harshly punish a repeat of this cowardly day. I voted for George McGovern in 1972. That was the first time I was able to vote in a presidential election. 36 years later, I won't be able to vote for a candidate who will get us out of Iraq, who will restore the Constitution, who will establish an administration that will follow the law. So the only alternative I'm left with are these. Leave the country or help to try to overthrow the Democratic leadership. And the Republican win, if the Republicans win in 2008, then we'll pack our bags and start memorizing the words to O Canada. If an evil, light Democrat wins, I'm truly torn. Do I leave and try to make a better life for my wife and little boy or stay and work within the system? I haven't seen work within the system effort pay off too many times. I'm stumped. Regards, Bob. All right, that's that. Yeah, so some of the emails I get are a hell of a lot more entertaining than me. Then I get this from Nanette. Hi, Mike. I've had it with the Democrats. I'm going to vote green all the way. See, here's an alternative. The Dems have absolutely no principles, so why should they be rewarded in 08? I'm frustrated and angry at their belief that they can continue to blatantly disregard what the majority of American citizens want and then expect that we will continue to vote them into office. What will they do differently from 2008 through 2012 that they aren't doing now? As much as I loathe the Republicans, I understand them as the knuckle-draggers and retrogrades that they are and don't expect anything more of them. The Democrats, however, have truly betrayed their supporters and have, for whatever reason, not taken us beyond the disastrous course that Bush and his thugs continue to pursue. Just what would they do for the country if they gain control? I suspect that they are much too timid to take the necessary steps to undo the tremendous damage that Bush and his gang have wrought. The Greens had no chance of winning, but their principles come closest to my own. If each of us who feels as I do would contact their Democratic representatives as well as those running for president and let them know that they will not get their vote, perhaps we will be taken seriously. I'm trying so hard not to numb out over all the storm and drong, but I'm at the point where all I want to do is drop out and buy a little farm in Italy and forget about the United States while it self-destructs. Nanette in Northern California. Do we have enough money to buy a little farm in Italy, Kathy?
We don't have enough money to buy a pizza in Little Italy.
I know. I knew you were going to say that. All right. Dana Siegelman, when we come back, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back, True Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio Network. All right, if something can go wrong, it will. Apparently, we had a miscommunication with Dana Siegelman. We talked to somebody at her phone number who says Dana is went to the gym to work out, and I would assume that Dana did not get, or somehow it crossed, there's cross communications on the time. The woman that answered the phone at Dana Siegelman's house said she'd be home in an hour. So I would assume that this is the problem. She understood, even though in all of our correspondence with her, we put ET, Eastern Time, and Alabama Central Time. So we may have to wait here. But that's okay, because it'll give me some time to bring you up to speed if you're not familiar with this story. also, General Wesley Clark had something to say about Don Siegelman at the Alabama Democratic Party's Jefferson Jackson dinner in Birmingham about a week ago. General Clark was the keynote speaker, and among other comments that General Clark made, he talked about the imprisonment of Don Siegelman, Governor Don Siegelman's imprisonment, his conviction and imprisonment on bribery charges. Now, if you don't know, former Governor Siegelman has been in federal prison since last June. While his legal team works to file an appeal, the appeal can't be filed yet because the transcript of the trial isn't complete 17 months after the trial ended. And his application for release pending appeal continues to bounce back and forth between the 11th Circuit Court and the judge who sentenced him. This is a perfect definition of legal limbo, or possibly political prisoner. It's awful what this family's going through, I'm telling you. Anyway, Wesley Clark made the following statement. One of the people who most represents Alabama to me is a guy named Don Siegelman. I happen to believe Don Siegelman was not only a great governor, but I believe he's a great American, and I believe he's an honest man, and I believe he's been unjustly confined. Won't you stand up and recognize Governor Don Siegelman? And there was standing applause at that point. And then Wesley Clark said, I wish he could hear your applause. Maybe he will. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank especially Congressman Arthur Davis for your work, sir, in getting Don Siegelman's case looked at the highest levels of government. It needs to be. But you all, for all our blessings, for all our blessings, we're a nation at war, and not only at war abroad, but war at home. There's a systematic campaign that's gone on for 20 years to overturn the ideas and the principles, the beliefs, the patterns, the hopes, the opportunities that we've labored so hard to put in place in this country. I know about those. I was 12 years old in Little Rock, Arkansas, when we went through the first desegregation crisis. I was one of those young people who understood intrinsically that there's a difference between right and wrong. That people are equal, they have to be treated fairly, that you have to have respect, you have to have justice in your life. We're seeing a 20-year campaign to polarize and partisanize this country and take away the basic fundamentals that we fought so hard to put in place. It's true. I mean, it's happening right here, right now. It's this prosecuting attorney's scandal. The use of executive power to put in wiretaps and other spying on the American people to take away our fundamental liberties. It's the wholesale politicization of the Department of Justice. It's the stench of corruption that's run from the White House through Jack Abramoff. And I'm hearing rumors of it right here in the state of Alabama. And we've got to get rid of it. Clark went on, and the video and the full context of what he said is available online. But Clark, so far, I'm fairly certain, is about the highest profile political person to bring up the case of former Governor Don Siegelman. The New York Times had an editorial back in August titled Selective Prosecution. And here's an excerpt. Putting a political opponent in jail is the sort of thing that happens in third world dictatorships. In the United States, prosecutions are supposed to be scrupulously nonpartisan. This principle appears to have broken down in Alberto Gonzalez's Justice Department, where lawyers were improperly hired for nonpolitical jobs based on party membership, and United States attorneys were apparently fired for political reasons. Individual Democrats may be paying a personal price. Don Siegelman, a former Alabama governor, was the state's most prominent Democrat and had a decent chance of retaking the governorship from the Republican incumbent. He was aggressively prosecuted by both the Birmingham and the Montgomery United States Attorney's offices. Birmingham prosecutors dropped their case after a judge harshly questioned it. When the Montgomery office prosecuted, a jury acquitted Mr. Siegelman of 25 counts, but convicted him of 7, which appear to be disturbingly weak. The prosecution may have been a political hit. A Republican lawyer, Dana Jill Simpson, has said in a sworn statement that she heard Bill Canary, a Republican operative and a Karl Rove protege, say that his girls, his wife, the United States attorney in Montgomery, and Alice Martin, the United States attorney in Birmingham, his girls would, quote, take care of Mr. Siegelman, end quote. Mr. Canary also said, according to Ms. Simpson, that Mr. Rove was involved. It's astonishing. What happened in the 2002 election that was stolen in Alabama, Siegelman, who was the Democratic incumbent, was running against Republican Bob Riley. And he had all the, by all appearances, he had won the election against Riley by a margin of roughly 3,000 votes. However, overnight, more ballots for Riley were found and counted by an all-Republican panel and subsequently sealed by then Alabama Attorney General Bill Pryor. In other words, a cabal of Republicans counted the votes, determined Riley was the real winner, and the Attorney General then sealed the ballots. In order for Democrats to even challenge the ballots, they'd have to get a court order. Now, according to rawstory.com, Larissa Alexandrovna says, to this day, those ballots remain sealed. Whistleblower Dana Jill Simpson, as reported at Raw Story, a Republican attorney doing opposition research for the Riley campaign, details in her affidavit and in congressional testimony Remember, she's a Republican, and she was doing opposition research for the Riley campaign. She details in her affidavit and in congressional testimony of a conference call after Siegelman's 2002 concession between the son of Governor Riley and Mr. Canary, in which they discuss ways to take care of Siegelman. In the first such attempt, a case alleging attempts on Siegelman's part to rig Medicare bids, U.S. District Judge U.W. Clemon cited an assistant U.S. attorney and an assistant attorney general for contempt of court in September of 2004, the ones who brought the case. Most of the evidence against Siegelman was barred and all the charges were ultimately dropped. So the next thing that happens is they shop for a judge, just like the Bush crime family did. Didn't we talk about this last night? Where it concerns turning the tapes explaining why the tapes. No, this is a different case. Turning over records that the Bush crime family doesn't want the American public to know about. And in order to bypass that order, the Bush crime family tried to find another judge. Well, the same thing in Alabama. This is what Karl Rove does. Bush appointed Judge Mark Fuller was assigned to the 2005 case in the district of Lura Canary against Siegelman, which would have Siegelman ultimately convicted of 7 out of 32 charges related to bribery and corruption. Judge Fuller, as Alabama's district attorney, was thought to have defrauded the state of Alabama by falsifying payroll records. Former Health South CEO Richard Scrushy donated $500,000 to Siegelman's campaign to fund the state lottery that would benefit education. Siegelman did not benefit at all directly from this contribution. Siegelman, in turn, appointed Scrushy to the Alabama Hospital Regulatory Board. The irony is that Scrushy has been on that board as the result of appointments by 3 other governors. More when we come back.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We have Dana Siegelman now on the line. We're going to go to her in just a second. Let me just reiterate what seems to be the basic conviction or the basic charge that Don Siegelman, on which Don Siegelman was convicted and sent to an inordinately long jail sentence, was this $500,000 that was donated to CEO or by CEO Richard Scrushy, CEO of Health South. The money was donated to Siegelman's campaign to fund the state lottery, which benefits education. Siegelman did not benefit at all directly, and Siegelman, in turn, as reported in Alabama Politics, appointed Scrushy to the Alabama Hospital Regulatory Board. And the irony, once again, is that Scrushy has been on that board under 3 other governors. So basically, that's what they got him on. Now, here is a very quick couple of lines from something Dana Siegelman posted at Daily Kos just about a month ago. Dear friends, for those of you who have been concerned about my dad, I'm writing to update you on his condition and to ask for your help again. After visiting my dad in prison, I have observed this. They do not feed him nearly enough. He has no privacy. He works as a janitor every day from 7 to 4. He is allowed few personal belongings, and he lives with real criminals. Duh. In parentheses there. However, despite the negative conditions he is under, his spirit remains positive and retains his hope in coming justice. Having my dad in prison has sharply awakened me to the many brutalities alive in this world. For years, I tried to hide from politics and salvage my naivete. This was a futile attempt. Hiding from and denying the injustices served to our people and the world is anything but empowering. We have the ability to face these problems and do something productive to stop them. Please join me in encouraging this committee to fight for the truth. She's referring to a committee in Congress, in the House of Representatives, to fight for the truth, to seek justice with all its power, and to rekindle the hope that we ought to have in our government. With all my heart, I thank you for our incredible for your incredible help, prayers, and love. Joining us now from Alabama is Dana Singleton. Hi, Dana.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Pretty good. Sorry we got confused on the time. Eastern time, Central time, who cares, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. No problem. How is your dad doing as we speak?
He is, doing as well as one can expect, given the conditions. But he, like I said in the letter, really does remain positive. He's the strongest person I know. He's always been like that. Any trial or tribulation that has been thrown at him throughout his political career, he's handled with grace and dignity. So he's doing the same in prison, and it's just a matter of time before he's vindicated.
This must have had, and I apologize for the understatement here, but this must have had a devastating effect on your family.
That is absolutely the effect that it had. I can't tell you how much closer we are because of it, which is a blessing. But, of course, we want him home every minute. It's going to be a very emotional Christmas without him. But we are doing everything in our power to make sure that justice is served quickly and that people know about this.
We have a break coming up here fairly quickly, Dana, but when we come back, what I would like you to do, if you can, is to kind of synopsize. I've been reading from some stuff here, rawstory.com, Daily Kos, a few other sources, New York Times editorial about your dad's imprisonment. But when we do come back from the break, what I'd like to do is, if you can, to just put this into terms that, tell us the story. Storytelling is what we're all about. That's what the human experience is storytelling. So when we come back from this break coming up in about a minute here, I'd like you to, if you could, just put it into your own words, what happened and how it affected not just your family, but the political atmosphere in the state of Alabama. I'm aware of some of your dad's record when he was a governor. And given the fact of where he was governing the state of Alabama, no offense, but he was absolutely a progressive governor and a decent human being, a good guy. And the fact that the Republicans went after him is not surprising, given the
right.
The ugliness of Karl Rove and what I refer to as the Bush crime family. But to have your dad be an absolute political prisoner in the United States in 2007 has got to be a mind scrambler.
Yes, it's unbelievable. I'll be more than happy to tell the story when we come back.
Okay, let me put you on hold, Dana. And this is about a 5-minute break. So if you just got in from exercise, if you want to get a glass of Gatorade or whatever you do after a workout, we'll come back and chat after the break. We're going to talk with Dana Singleton, the daughter of former Alabama Governor Don Singleton, who has been jailed as, in my opinion, a political prisoner in the United States because he had the temerity to say no to the Bush crime family. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour. Again, Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, who was persecuted and prosecuted by the Bush crime family, and is now serving a lengthy jail sentence in a federal prison. As a result of what the New York Times has referred to as a political hit, we're talking with Dana Siegelman, who is Governor Siegelman's daughter. All right, Dana, if you would, tell us the story of what happened with your dad.
All right. The most prevalent example starts with the 2002 governor's race. It was my dad against Bob Riley, a Republican. And what happened was, the night of the election, the votes were given to my dad. My dad came and gave his speech and thanked everyone. And we went to sleep. And then the next morning, Bob Riley was on television announcing that he indeed was governor. So it was a little awkward that he got news of missing ballots in Baldwin County before my dad did. We were all very shocked by the news. Apparently, ballots had gone missing in the middle of the night in Baldwin County, and there were enough votes to swing the election in Bob Riley's favor. So my dad called for a recount, and the sitting attorney general at the time was Bill Pryor, also a Republican. And Bill Pryor threatened anyone with jail time that sought to open the ballots and recount them. Mm-hmm. So recounting them seemed a futile attempt. My dad conceded the election. And what we have then is my dad looking to campaign again in 2006. There was an indictment. He was threatened with an investigation, and they ended up dropping the first indictment because there was no evidence and the judge threw it out. So we were all very relieved and thought, okay, well, that's the end of that trial. And then come lo and behold, in 2006, right as my dad is running again for governor, a second indictment is brought with a whole new slew of charges, 35 to be exact, I believe, and all but seven were used to convict him, and those seven were bribery and mail fraud charges. And like you said earlier, it included Scrutiny, who had previously been indicted and vindicated from those charges. So there were already a lot of people that thought he was guilty and needed to be convicted of something. And so it was a perfect pair to bring Scrutiny in with my dad to get them convicted anyways. So what we have is a team of Republicans, conspirators, really, because that's what they are, mm-hmm. That work together to bring this indictment and conviction against my dad. What we are told is that, well, we know that the indictment came out of Bill Pryor's office. Bill Pryor was, again, the sitting attorney general during the 2002 election in which he threatened people to not recount these votes. And which threw the election in Bob Riley's favor. Then the lead prosecutor appointed by Bush was Laura Canary. She was the wife of Bill Canary. Bill Canary happened to be the campaign manager for Bob Riley.
Oh, God.
So what we have is an obvious group of people that are good friends that have worked together. And Karl Rove, on top of that, had been hired previously by Pryor to work on his campaign, was a good friend of Bill Canary's and Bob Riley's, and has been found to be linked to the conviction because he made sure that the Justice Department would put a judge mm-hmm. in place that would want to hang my dad. So we have a group of Republicans that basically, behind the scenes, made sure that my dad would be out of public office for good, and that's exactly what they've done thus far. And I hope that makes sense. I know that was a lot of names and positions.
No, it does make sense, Dana, and I think people are starting to pay attention across the country to what has happened to your father and how, in a sense, how easily it was done. It doesn't take a whole lot to steal an election, as I think is evidenced by the presidential election in 2000 and then again in 2004. It is even easier once the crime family has established how to do it, either with voter fraud or with all of a sudden, quote, finding, close quote, missing ballots. And coupling that with threats from a federal attorneys or attorneys general in the various states that if you touch this or look at that, I'll lock you up. This is like the Soviet Union. It's incredible. What do you think is the main reason, Dana, they went after your dad?
Without a shadow of a doubt, he was the strongest Democrat in the state. And he had been Secretary of State, Attorney General, Lieutenant Governor, and then Governor. He was the longest-running politician in the state of Alabama's history. And for Republicans, that was scary to have a Democrat that was so strong that had just been elected governor. You know, they didn't want their state to be a Democratic state. And they did everything in their power to see to that it wasn't. And so that is the answer that we have to give because he was an up and rising star in the political scene, very easily could have jumped to national politics, wanted to and was seeking to do something nationally, and had spoken out right as Bush had been elected the first time, had spoken out against the war and against going to war at all, and against Bush, and said some silly things that I think threatened the Republican Party. Not silly things, in our perspective, but in their perspective, just went out on a limb and shouldn't have said a few things that he said. And so I think that their eyes were on him from that point on. And then, of course, when he sought to run for governor again, they kind of had him.
Who are the other members of your immediate I guess the term is nuclear family? Your mom and who else?
My mom and my younger brother, Joseph.
So there's your mother and your brother and you, and then your dad, who is now sitting in a state prison. No, a federal penitentiary.
He is in Oakdale, Louisiana, at a federal prison.
When he was put on trial, how did your family, how were you able to defend yourself against the Bush administration, which essentially is what you were doing? I guess what I'm looking for here is what sort of legal team did you have? What sort of expense did you have to go to?
Well, we never really thought there would be a conviction. I mean, we assumed because the first indictment was thrown out so soon that, I mean, we just assumed the second one would be, too. We had no idea it would last 4 years. So financially, it was a stretch for us. I can't exactly say how we've managed because a lot of people have helped us. I mean, more people than I could ever mention, people I don't even know have helped us.
Sure.
And it's because of the love that they have for my dad. It's for what he has done for this state. It is for the kindness that he has distilled upon so many people that he doesn't even know. I mean, so we have help that is beyond measure, and that's how we've managed. We've had lawyers that have given their expertise at no expense. We had Martin Luther King's attorney, Fred Gray, come in and sit in the courthouse so that he could be present, so that they would see that he was there, that he was angry, that he knew injustice was happening, and wanted to stop it. And Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth, who was the best friend of Martin Luther King, came and sat in the courtroom as well. And I mean, so many incredible figures have lent a hand during this trial, and it's amazing. It is absolutely unbelievable that they were able to convict him with no written evidence, but on one person's word. Unbelievable.
When the verdict, the verdicts, I should say, were being read off in court, and you all, your family, heard all those not guilties, I would assume that the not guilties came first.
I didn't actually go to court that day. my brother and I decided that we would not be there because my dad, I mean, you know if you're going to get sentenced or not. I mean, you already know. So my dad knew he was going to get sentenced. Yes, he didn't know for how long, but he knew he was going to get sentenced. They went there expecting that because of who the judge was. I mean, there was just no way out of it. The jury had been asleep through half the trial. I mean, the days that I went, half of the jury was asleep. They dragged this trial out so long and brought in so many frivolous witnesses that offered no evidence whatsoever, and brought in, tried to bring in written accounts that they all threw out. And so they really, I mean, they had one witness that they were able to offer up, prosecution was able to offer up, that was actually trained to say what he said, which we know now. I mean, we have someone that, you know, was with this person right before he went on the stand that said that he had memorized exactly what he was going to say and that the prosecution had given him absolutely no choice. And so that's what we're left with. And so knowing what we knew, my brother and I didn't go. But you're right. I mean, all the charges that were thrown out, you would think it was obvious that they had been trying to bring a conviction just to get the man, you know, not to get a criminal. Otherwise, you would you would have seen a lot more of those charges.
Dana, can you hold on just a second?
Sure.
All right, we have to do a break here. We'll come back. We're talking to Dana Siegelman, the daughter of imprisoned former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
Making the pie higher, it's more of Mike Molloy.
10 before the hour, we're talking with Dana Siegelman, who is the daughter of former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, who has been convicted and sentenced to prison, federal prison, as a result of a conspiracy against him by members of the Bush Organization. Dana, August 6, 2007, The New York Times. I just want to quote a couple of questions here, or statements here, and answer your question. The Times says, the prosecution of Governor Siegelman may have been a political hit. A Republican lawyer, Dana Jill Simpson, has said in a sworn statement that she heard Bill Canary, a Republican operative and a Karl Rove protege, say that his girls, in other words, his wife, the United States Attorney in Montgomery, and Alice Martin, the United States Attorney in Birmingham, would, quote, take care of, end quote, Mr. Siegelman. Mr. Canary also said, according to Ms. Simpson, that Mr. Rove was involved. What can you tell us about the so-called girls, these two U.S. attorneys in Birmingham and Montgomery?
Well, I can't tell you too much, not because I don't want to, but I don't know all the facts of these two people. Obviously, Laura Canary is the wife of Bill Canary, who was my dad's opponent's campaign manager. So that in itself is an obvious connection to some sort of conspiracy, Republican political conspiracy, to bring him out of office. And Alice Martin, I don't know much about her. I believe they were both appointed by Bush and, you know, very much involved in the Republican Party, but that is all I do know.
How is your mom handling this?
She is a strong woman, and she loves my dad very much, and she's doing everything in her power to be a part of seeking justice and freedom for him. And she is a shy one when it comes to speaking out in public, but she answers letters well, and she's been doing a great job answering the phone and answering questions. So, you know, we're all in this together. There are many people, like I said before, I don't even know most of them, that love and admire my dad, that are hurting right now because of where he is. And so, even those people, you know, are with us in prayer, and their prayers are with us as well. So this is a big group effort. We're all seeking to restore justice in the Justice Department of America.
Now, it was my understanding that the trial transcript, 17 months after the trial, had not been completed and released to your dad's attorneys so they can begin filing the appeal process. Is that still the case, or
it
have you?
Is, It is still the case. In fact, Judge Fuller has asked for another extension. Obviously, we believe that this is intentional to keep my dad in prison, to keep him hushed. Judge Fuller, in addition to not finishing the trial transcript, which should have been done 17 months, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. also hasn't turned over any of the documents asked for by Congress and the House Judiciary Committee, who is holding the investigation right now in Congress, and is not giving a response to the 11th Circuit Court, which is in charge of the appeal process. So we have three examples of where this one man has refused to comply in order to bring justice. I mean, he is a judge, and he is not complying with any of these three departments. So it's very interesting.
It's astonishing, Dana. I've got to say that I certainly respect you and your brother and your mom, and especially your dad, that you all have managed to hold yourselves together in the situation. This is just. I mean, it's an unbelievable situation that you and your mom and dad and brother are in, obviously. I'm glad to see that the country now is starting to pay attention to what happened to your dad. Mainstream media is, I think, beginning to focus some attention on this, other than an editorial on the New York Times. I think the hearings in the Judiciary Committee are going to help. What is it that you need from people or want from people right now? And I've got 2 minutes left, and I just want you to tell us what you need, Dana.
It would be wonderful if people across America would write to the House Judiciary Committee. The chairman is Congressman Conyers Jr., and he would be the one that people should write to. You can also write to the Alabama Congressman Arthur Davis. Arthur Davis has done a lot of research on this case, and he was not a good friend of my dad's. He's a fellow Democrat, but he was actually a friend of one of the prosecutors on the case, was a U.S. prosecutor at one point himself, and is absolutely astonished at what has happened and has been working tirelessly to see justice through in this case. And we just need to keep encouraging Congress that this is a pivotal example of how corruption has happened since the Bush administration, how they've used the Justice Department as a political tool. It's got to stop.
Mm-hmm.
So writing to Congress, this House Judiciary Committee, would be absolutely beneficial.
The last question I want to ask you, and Dana, thanks so much for taking time to talk with us tonight. Let people know through this program what you folks are dealing with, and I hope we get a chance to talk again. But in the last minute here, how are you holding up, you, Dana Siegelman?
I have been on a journey of faith and hope. I was devastated, like you said earlier before. I mean, you nailed it. That's exactly how I felt. I felt lost and in despair for at least 2 months. And I realized that, as I put in my letter, I cannot hide from this, that I have the opportunity to face it head on and do everything in my power to turn it around. And so that's what we're doing. We're trying to stay strong, to stay positive, and to seek justice.
Well, Dana, I think anyone in this country that has a heart and a brain have a great deal of respect for you and your family. This will work out. Justice will prevail. I don't mean to hand you a platitude. God forbid I should do something like that. But I think you understand, and I think most people know, that there is going to be justice in your dad's case. It may take a while, but it's coming like a mighty river, I think Dr. King said. Dana, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Stay in touch, please, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, Dana. Take care. Dana Siegelman is the daughter of imprisoned former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Like a bird.
drunk in a midnight choir. I have tried in my way to be free.
Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. You know, when you stop and think about the Bush crime family, think about what happened to Valerie Plame and Joe Wilson when they got in the way of this filthy, corrupt administration. Think about Governor Dan Siegelman. How many examples? Think about the fired federal attorneys around the country who were trying to do their job in a nonpartisan way. Think about the regulatory agencies that were trying to do as much of a job as they could, given 25 years of deregulation fever in this country. But there were still some people left at the various regulatory agencies when the Bush crime family seized power in this bloodless coup back in 2000. Think of how their careers were body slammed. And in place of them, the Bush crime family installed political operatives in much the same way as the old Soviet Union used to do. What these people have done, these people being the Bush crime family, what they've done to our system of government, I just wonder sometimes how many people are really aware. Apparently not very many. So much of this stuff, since they're not tanks in the streets of downtown Detroit or uptown New York City, since there has not been officially declared a state of emergency in this country or martial law, since the possibility of using the potential internment camps that do exist in this country and have existed since the mid-80s, since all of that is obviously not happening, but behind the scenes, under the radar of the American public, thanks to this filthy television medium that we have in this country, all sorts of murderous banana republic stuff is occurring. And we just kind of float through it all, don't we? We get focused on this crisis today. What is it today? Well, it's the mortgage meltdown. Okay, what is it now today? What is it? Well, it's the war. Okay, what is it tomorrow? It's what happened to the torture tapes. Okay, what is it tomorrow? It just doesn't stop. One thing after another until finally, I think the average American says to hell with it. It's too big. My party, the Democrats, don't do anything about it. They enable this stuff to happen by not stopping the appointments or the confirmations of some of these criminals to the federal bench and to the cabinet posts and to regulatory positions and to ambassadorships. The Democrats in the House and the Senate do nothing. There is no news media left to speak of. There are a few glaring exceptions. Yes, yes, yes. There are a few people who are still struggling against this tide of offal and excrement that just pours out of the White House on a daily basis. And now through the mouth of this little Nazi broad, Dana Perino, it gets to a point, doesn't it, where the so-called average American just throws his or her hands up in the air and says, look, what do you want me to do? I can't do anything. I can't do anything. And in a very essential way, that is a true statement. In a very essential way, that's a true statement. Because what is left? If our system of electing representatives, whether they're U.S. House, U.S. Senate, President, in this experiment of self-government, if the system is broken, and last night and tonight we reported on both Ohio and Colorado. Is that the one that I was talking about tonight? where the systems electronic voting don't work. They're subject to fraud, manipulation, and they don't work. If the system of electing people is broken, if the corporatists have taken over, if decisions regarding the health and well-being of the American public is now decided by the corporations who continue to feed America illness, pollution, and death, and I don't care how you cut it, that's what they are doing. If those decisions now as to U.S. government policy are no longer decided by a regulatory agency or a congressional committee or a responsible leadership in the White House, if all those decisions, and they are being made, and they are being made, by corporations, and corporations, of course, are faceless, nameless entities. Their papers filed someplace. There are corporate officers who can affect the policy. And then you have a monster like Dick Cheney, who sells his ass, his arms, his brain, his guts, and his heart to the highest bidder. He doesn't care who buys him. He doesn't care what he does. Given all this and the fact that impeachment is being blocked by an incompetent Speaker of the House and perhaps a co-conspirator in this madness, and given the fact that the average American is not going to pick up a gun and take to the streets, then what's left? What's left? Anybody got any ideas? A couple of years ago, when I was still with the soon-to-be non-existent Air America, I made the statement in not a whimsical way, but in a way that was just this side of being threatening or a warning. I said something to the effect that historically, when fascism comes to a country, unless you're, and it usually comes from an internal source, unless you are a targeted group, and quickly comes to mind in Italy, the trade unionists, in Germany, the Jews, if you are not a targeted group when fascism begins to take over your system of self-government, It's almost as though a light spider web, almost invisible cloak, descends on everything, and you can get along just fine. You can be an artist, you can be a poet, you can be a worker, you can be an executive, you can work in your garden, you can do whatever you want to do up to a point. You may not challenge corporate authority. You may not question how leaders are elected and then very gradually appointed, which is where we are now. You are not allowed to raise your head above the crowd because it will be hacked off instantly. You may not question authority, whether it is a religious authority or governmental authority or regulatory authority. What you may do, what you are allowed to do in a fascist state, if you are very cautious and very quiet, you are allowed to participate in patriotic observations. You're allowed to participate in celebratory occasions, whether they are semi-religious holidays. And of course, Christmas being the most blatant example of one that is having the Christianity part of it gutted and replaced by corporate Christianity, which is nothing really at all. You're allowed your celebrations. You're allowed to sit in the nearest tavern and perhaps drink, you know, a glass or two or six or 20 of Victory Gin. You're allowed to smoke Victory cigarettes, but you are not allowed to work against the fascism that has taken over your country. And the co-conspirators include government and media. Media and government. So what's the answer, Truth Seeker? You're smarter than I am. What's the answer?
Talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. Excuse me. Let's do some phone calls. Mike is calling from Chicago, listening on the internet. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? I haven't talked to you in a while.
I know you haven't. I'm doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing good. I just wanted to wish Kathy, Molly, and yourself, first of all, a happy holiday.
Thank you very much.
But the two things I want for Christmas more than anything, obviously other than you, Stephanie, and Randy to come to Chicago, is I want one of the Democrats, candidates to ask Hillary, how can you say that you're going to be tough on administration reform when until this day you've never addressed the impeachment against your husband and the non-impeachment against this administration? That should be your platform. She should have lava coming out of her eyes against, you know, the wonderful Speaker of the House.
Are you referring to Hillary Clinton?
Yes.
Hillary Clinton is not a Democrat.
No, I stand corrected. Yeah. You are right.
Hillary Clinton is, and I'm not picking on her because she's Hillary Clinton. I say this because she is who she is. She is the choice of corporate America to be the next president in this succession of presidents since Reagan, who have done everything in their power to ease corporatism into our system of self-government. Hillary is just the latest. Before her, it was this half-wit that's there now. Before him was Hillary's husband. Before him was the half-wit's father. And before him was Ronald Reagan. This is the way it's been since 1980. This is 2007. We've had a quarter of a century.
Yeah, pretty much they're trying to sneak her under the radar through the corporate television, pretty
right.
much.
Right. I mean, there is no question. Does anybody out there have any question as to Hillary Clinton's real function or her real politics? She is no more of a liberal or a progressive Democrat than I'm the Pope. And I damn sure am not the Pope, as Mother Jones talked about on several occasions, and they've been very fair. They Mother Jones has come out and said, well, if you're against Hillary Clinton, maybe it's because you've got a problem. But if you want somebody who's pro-war, it's Hillary. Someone who's pro-tax cuts for rich people, it's Hillary. Someone who is willing to go along with torture, it's Hillary. Someone who's pro-corporations, it's Hillary. Someone who is anti-privacy rights is Hillary. Someone who's anti-gay marriage, it's Hillary. Someone who's anti-immigrants, it's Hillary. It just goes on and on and on. And that's why real progressives don't like her.
And you know what? And no one's addressed this. All these loudmouths that talk on the television and they say the Democrats, all they want to do is raise your taxes. No one has stood up and said, how else do you think this war is going to get paid for? Do you think this trillions of dollars is going to come out of nowhere?
Right, but no Democratic presidential candidate that I'm aware of has talked about raising taxes. What they've talked about is ending the tax breaks on that 0.5% of the wealthiest in this country that has cost the U.S. Treasury a couple of $1 trillion in lost tax income or tax revenue. The idea of labeling the Democrats as pro-tax and wanting to destroy the military and so on and so forth is so old. I can't believe the American public or a segment of it still buys that bat crap. Yeah. It is so. That sounds like something from the 70s, for Christ's sake.
It's like buying a lemon from a dealership and then going back the next year and buying another car.
Again and again and again and again. Yeah. It's just. I don't know, Mike.
And you know what? The second one, real quick, is the second wish for Christmas is Pollyanna Perino. Why no one has stood up and said, you know, you see that chair in the first row with the gold plaques? That was Helen Thomas's. She's the oldest person in the White House press corps. She's now been bumped to the back row, and Fox News now sits in that chair. And the last time at the NIE press conference, you notice Bush's seating chart, there was an X across Helen Thomas's name. Mm-hmm. No one's addressed that. Why? When was the last time you heard Helen Thomas ask a question?
Right. Well, nobody in the crack White House press corps is going to say a word. If they have, most of them have zero integrity. If they do have integrity, they also probably have a mortgage and kids in college. So they're not going to say anything that's going to, A, get them removed from the White House press list, and, B, ultimately get them fired from their corporate pig network. Or publication. So they sit there and take it. Now, all of the crack White House press corps are dumbasses. As a matter of fact, some of them are five times as intelligent as anyone in the Bush crime family, but they're operating out of fear for their own financial well-being. And therefore, they will not bring into that press room the integrity necessary to put Dana Perino on the spot. They just won't do it.
Because if you cause waves, you won't be invited back to the party, pretty much.
You got that right. Mike, I got to leave there. Thanks,
okay.
Pal. Take care. We'll talk again. Take care, Mike. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Wake up and smell the job.
Your host for a Pience Friance future, it's Mike Malloy.
Well, Merry Christmas, everybody. It's 25 before the hour. Bruce writes, hey, Mike, while what you are saying about creeping fascism as it now exists is true, I think you may be giving people the impression that it will level off at a tolerable level. You aren't taking into account peak oil, global warming, and currency collapse. We're not in a situation that resembles the typical rise of fascism where you have a failed state like Germany or Italy, or more recently China, that adopts fascism to revitalize the economy. Our situation more resembles the end of the Roman Empire, where the Christians burned the libraries and banned reading and writing. Get ready for the next and probably last Dark Ages. I don't expand, Bruce, I guess, on what I'm trying to say. When I talk about fascism leveling off at a tolerable level, everything is temporary. I'm sure you're aware of that. Any situation that develops within a nation state is temporary. It may be 100 years long temporary, but it's temporary. You know, the 1,000-year Reich lasted, what, 9 years, if that. What I'm saying is that fascism itself, it was in Italy from the 20s until the end of, until they hanged Mussolini and his girlfriend from the nearest lamppost. Which was, I don't know, what, a couple, 20 years? the point I'm trying to make is that in a society that is already distracted, and there has never been a more distracted society than this one, distracted from those things that matter, like peak oil, global warming, currency collapse. The people who make up that society, that distracted society, don't even recognize fascism when it comes. And since they don't recognize it, it is tolerable. I mean, how could it not be if they don't recognize it? It is tolerable as long as there is not open resistance to the fascism. Then everybody goes about their business as usual. Now, you're absolutely right where it concerns currency collapse. Of course, fascism in Germany reversed currency collapse. Fascism in Germany reversed energy dependence after World War I for the German state. But what we have now, obviously, is a global climate change that is the X factor that has to be considered in every human enterprise now, no matter what it is. If it's self-government, if it's do we build a bridge from here to there? Do we go to the beach next year? What beach? You know, on and on and on. The X factor, the big factor, and peak oil. What happens when the people whose responsibility it is in the society to be innovative and think, what did I read the other day? Google is getting into the energy business? Okay, that's fine with me. But the people who are, or the institutions that are designed, at least on paper, to do the heavy lifting where it concerns problem solving, seem to have just kind of given up. Not in all areas. No, of course not. In medical research, I think there's still a lot of innovative work, a real cutting-edge work, how to annihilate the goal, of course, annihilate these degenerative diseases. But the point I'm trying to make, and if it's not coming through, that's my bad. The point I'm trying to make is that fascism, when it comes, is if the people don't recognize it as such, it's easy to live in it as long as you don't recognize it and say, wait a second, this is not something I want. That's the only point I was trying to make. And my explanation made it worse. I know. Oh, what the hell. Where are we here? Robin is calling from I-5 in California, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Robin.
Mike.
Robin.
I want to thank you for the last 4 years, I've been wanting to thank you for letting me know that I'm not out of my freaking mind, that I'm not the only one that's out here going, what the hell?
No, you're not. You really are not.
I have feared it. But I also wanted to thank you for bringing Dana on, because I've been trying to research that story and get some details on it, and it's like nothing. There's nothing out there that I can find other than opinions.
Well, now wait. There is some research. I don't know if you can write this down. Maybe you remember it. Rawstory.com.
Okay.
Rawstory.com.
I first heard about this a month ago. Were they carrying it then?
Larissa Alexandrovna and a couple of people at Raw Story have been following this extensively. There is also, I think, Harper's Magazine has had an investigative reporter on this. Also, TakeBackTheMedia.com. Has done some work on it. So, you have to dig. What you're saying is mainstream media has not focused on this political prisoner who was a governor of the state of Alabama. You're absolutely right.
That's it.
New York Times had an editorial questioning and alluding to the fact that it may have been a political hit that put Siegelman in prison.
Right.
Well, that's what the Times says, may have. They have to be very careful because they're part of mainstream media.
And, you know, being a truck driver, I'm surrounded by knuckle-dragging mouth breathers that
Oh, yeah.
Constantly tell me, oh, I got nothing to fear about them tapping my phone. Well, this is a prime example of why you should fear them tapping your phone.
Well, that's,
you know, if you got a good looking wife and one of them decides he wants to get a hold of her, all he has to do is pull some strings and you disappear.
Well, that's one reason to disappear somebody. But that's what I'm talking about, Robin, about fascism. When it comes, so many people just figure, well, what? I don't notice a thing. There's nothing going on. Sit down and shut up. What are you yelling about, Robin? There's nothing wrong. Damn. You know,
Oh, my God.
That kind of thing, right?
Mike, thank you. And as you say, keep it lit.
All right, Robin, drive safe. Drive safe.
Cool.
All right, take care. My God, he's on I-5. What do you got to worry about on I-5? Earthquakes, mudslides, forest fires, floods, and tidal waves.
Other drivers.
Who we got here? Jeremy is calling from upstate New York, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Well, I'm as concerned as you are, and quite frankly have been for, I don't know, I'd say at least since October of 2001. I gave the guy the benefit of the doubt up through then, and he did nothing to impress me during the first month following the disaster. And it's been all downhill ever since. I'm also, unfortunately, I think one of the last generations of Americans to not be born under intergenerational tyranny. I mean, I was born in 76. I don't think that started to really hit us until 80 when Reagan basically saddled us with so much debt that my generation is going to have to work 15 times harder than any generation before it just to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
And when you couple that with the fact that, I mean, society has been closing down for the last 7 years. There isn't any question in my mind.
What do you mean by that?
Well, they've been telling people to sit down and shut up pretty regularly, and they've been succeeding at it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. The mainstream media isn't focusing on it. They want nothing to do with it. The only reason you find out about anything like, I don't know, the police tasering somebody for asking a question, is because of YouTube. Thank God for the Google Corporation still keeping that up for now.
I'm sure
that'll change soon once the shareholders realize that it's more profitable to just, keep in line with what the government wants.
Thank God for the liberal and progressive bloggers. Without the bloggers, where would we be?
Yeah, really, at this point, there's very, very little. I think that we still have those interpersonal social networks that were in existence and have been in existence in this country since its founding. You know, I mean, the reason that the post office was included in our government's founding paperwork is because the mail is how this country got started. It's all those little letters that people write back and forth. That's how the conspiracy that got this country started. And quite frankly, at this point, I mean, I think that's the only way that things are going to change. We need another national conspiracy. It doesn't have to be violent. I mean, we learned the lessons in the 60s. I mean, political theater in this country is very valuable. We're not doing it right now, and I think the reason we're not doing it is because, quite frankly, if you do it, you're going to get beat down much harder than you ever were in the past.
That's true. Jeremy, let me put you on hold a second, because I want you to finish that thought. We'll be right back after the break.
Well, it all just seems to change. But hanging on is easy when you've got a friend to call, when nothing's making sense at all.
Ten before the hour, thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered, co-produced the program tonight, Billy Foster, our technical director, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Let's go back to Jeremy, who has called in from upstate New York. Very quickly, Jeremy, go ahead, wrap it up for me.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I think you're right that it isn't It isn't an ideological problem. It's a corporate tyranny. Mm-hmm. And I think that the problem is that campaign finance has been the issue where they've controlled both parties. Clearly, they are controlling both parties. And my own thoughts are the way to send a message and the way to change things is to put the people back in charge by using that power, that invention called the Internet, to actually fund some progressive candidates. And that's the work I've been doing.
Well, that makes sense, because we have lost the country. I'm talking about the country has lost a responsible mainstream media, and that includes television and cable. We have also lost responsible journalism in the newspapers. There is still some going on with a few of the writers who write for some of these huge publishing corporations, whether they're newspapers or magazines. And you know, we could sit here very quickly and come up with names and publications that are still fighting the fight. But for the most part, mainstream media, and by that I mean of what most of us tune into to get what we think is the day's news of events that we think are important to us, is all bat squeeze and nonsense. And again, keeping in mind that television is designed to make people forget, and it's been very effective in doing that. So you're absolutely right. The Internet is either going to be our complete downfall, because the Internet is, you know, the Wild West, the open frontier, or it's going to be our salvation, and I think we're going to decide that. Jeremy, I got to leave it there. Thank you very much. I appreciate
Thank
your
you.
Insights, pal. All right, take care. Take care. Barbara is calling from Minneapolis, listening on the Internet. Hey, Barbara.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
May I first say I like so much of the music that... whoever picks it out.
Well, that's Kathy. Kathy.
Oh, Kathy.
She does
especially like Moody Blues and Leonard Cohen and things like that.
Yeah, she does a great job.
Yes. Well, this goes back a few conversations. First of all, I want to say that I have a Democratic friend, a great gal, and she just loves Hillary. And I keep saying to her, but Hillary's a Republican.
Mm-hmm. And what does your friend say to that?
She just laughs at me because she knows me. We get into it, you know, in a friendly way because we're both Dems. But I'm an Edwards person, and I'm just wondering what your comments would be that way, or if you care.
Well, I'm starting to swing that way. John Edwards. I think Kathy has been the most instrumental in telling me to seriously take a look at the Edwards candidacy, and I'm trying to do that with the amount of time I have available to really get into it. I'm not pleading anything here except. You know, I've got a 3.5-year-old that I'm helping to raise, and Molly is pretty pretty demanding right now. But in the time that I do have, I've been checking out and listening closely to what Edwards is saying. And I think you're right. I think he may be the answer, Barbara. Now, I know I'm going to get emails from people who are going to point out all kinds of weaknesses in Edwards' position. Okay, fair enough. But... I'm starting to agree with the idea that Edwards may be the man. Yes.
Well, the only other thing I wanted to add to that, and I'm sure Kathy's been keeping track of this as well, and that's that the polls show that he would beat any Republic candidate more than Hillary or Obama or any of the others. I mean, he still is points ahead of any other Democrat against Republicans. And I think I'm hoping that he's going to be kind of the sleeper that will, you know, he's doing good in Iowa. But anyway, thank you for your take on that. And tell Kathy I'm with her.
All right. You just did. She's listening. Thanks, Barbara.
And have a wonderful holiday, however you spend.
You too. I always say Merry Christmas. You know, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, by God. That's what it is to me. It is a holiday, but it's Christmas and New Year's. I also say Happy Hanukkah. I say Happy Ramadan. Are you supposed to say Happy? I don't know. Are you supposed to be happy on Ramadan? I really don't know. I'm not trying to be a jerk here.
You forgot Kwanzaa, but Edwards is out now because apparently he has a love child.
Who does?
John Edwards.
He has a love child.
There's some pregnant woman claiming that...
Oh, no.
Yeah, Drudge.
Just, oh, this is from Drudge? Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. This is like they did to Carrie.
I worked.
Yeah. Well, no, it was... Well, it sure. It heated up the mouth-breathing, foam-flecking, spittle-dropping right-wingers on radio. He's got a love child. Oh, my. Yeah. He had one love child who died in a car wreck, and he has... how many children do the Edwards have? Two other children.
They're adorable.
The kids? Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. Drudge. Oh, Drudge. Somebody ought to wrap a strong Republican entrail around his neck and hoist him up about 6 feet in the air and watch him bounce. Mike Malloy threatens Matt Drudge on national radio. I can just see it now. Some filthy right-wing blogger is going to pick up on that real quick, right? Not that I care. It doesn't matter. We're about out of time. If you're on hold, I'm sorry. We're not going to get to you tonight. We will eventually. We will get to you eventually. Don't forget, Friday night is our Christmas program. I think we will have a letter from Pickles Bush, O Holy Nightmare, the reading of the Christmas story as reported in the book of Luke, Night Before Christmas, who wrote Night Before Christmas?
Was it Samuel Clemens? Somebody Clemens?
No,
that was
Mark Twain.
I guess he didn't write it.
And it wasn't Clement Attlee. Who was it? Oh, never
oh, no.
mind. Don't send me emails. I'll look it up.
Winter Solstice.
Winter Solstice. Yeah, we're going to have and lots of Christmas music and some... hey, we better say goodnight. Take care, y'all. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.